Blog Talk Radio.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look down yonder, Gabriel. Put your feet on the land and sea. But Gabriel, don't you blow your trumpet till you hear from me. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Jesus, meet me in the middle of the air. And if these wings don't fail me, I will meet you anywhere. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, meet me, mother and father. Meet me down the river road. And mama, you know that I'll be there when I check in, my Lord. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
All right, fellow patriots, it's Sunday night, and that was Ain't No Grave by Johnny Cash. I played that song because that's really how I'm feeling this afternoon, that, you know, not only individually, there's no grave that's going to hold this body, but we should not allow the idea of the United States of America to be buried in the grave of history. And that's exactly what's going on. It's been going on for a long time. I know some of you, Kyra, and some we've got a guest here, and others were on my show the other night, and I've been talking about a book that I've recently read, The Real Abraham Lincoln by Thomas DiLorenzo. When you read the real history of Abraham Lincoln and some of our past administrations, you understand that the idea of the founding of this nation was under attack from the very outset. And the culmination of those attacks was the Lincoln administration, and we've been living under an altered concept of government ever since. And as things continue to move forward with the economies in turmoil, both here in the United States and abroad, if it were not for the turmoil in the Middle East and Europe in the economies, the U.S. would be looking mighty poor right now. We are looking fairly poor, but the dollar is very strong. You know, George Bush used to say he was for a strong dollar policy, even though they were bastardizing the American workman every day. But nonetheless, we should not allow this country and the idea of individual rights and a republican form of government go down into the grave of history. And if I have anything to do with it, we're not going to allow that to happen. Want to give a shout out to everybody in the chat room. And hopefully we'll be getting some more folks coming in here from the Patriot families. I wanted to post a link for you to an article or a video I was just watching on Prison Planet. Now, I know a lot of people don't ascribe to Alex Jones and his form of journalism, but that's all right. I still think this is worth watching. In the video, he's talking about military armor wandering the streets of St. Louis, Missouri. And there was a local Fox News affiliate that reported on it, but evidently that video report has been removed from the internet. They, of course, said it was a training exercise, and I believe that. It is a training exercise, and they tell you what they're training for. They're training for an economic collapse and for the military to move in and take over domestic law enforcement. That's illegal, ladies and gentlemen, or it's martial law, whichever way you want to look at it. You know, Barack Obama has long wanted to emulate Abraham Lincoln, and I believe that he is emulating Lincoln. He certainly has no regard for the concept of our Constitution or our laws. The laws to him are merely subjective. They apply only to those that he wishes to enforce them on, and they don't apply to others whom he wishes to pardon by allowing them to circumvent the law, much like his latest executive decree on illegal immigration. While we hear all of these bleeding hearts out there decrying the deplorable conditions and the horrible idea of deporting some poor illegal and the poor children, you know, through no fault of their own, ended up in this country and now they're going to be deported. Well, you know, they're exactly right. It's through no fault of the children. They didn't choose for our Congress and our government to ignore our laws and allow their parents into the country illegally and just turn a blind eye to the violation of our law and our sovereignty. No, that is directly the responsibility of Congress, and I think it's time we start putting that responsibility on them. When we hear that kind of garbage spouted, we need to be responding to it. And I see we have Mr. Robert, I believe, on the line. Robert, is that you, sir?
That is me, Ron. You're absolutely right.
Your call clarity is quite fascinating this evening. How are you, sir?
That's what you call the innovation of technology.
So you got rid of the old hand crank cell phone and got a new one, or what?
Oh, man. Man alive. No, it's the same one. It's just been working better for some reason. I don't know why.
Outstanding.
But anyhow, yeah, I mean, that executive order on immigration was just a political ploy, I guess.
Well, I mean, you know, you're right. And, you know, here's something interesting. Okay? And I think this just gets to further my point from a previous show about the fact that the two parties and those that are the golden children within the two parties, to use an old analogy, the fact that they're both playing the same game, and the only variance that they have, other than some slight managerial ideologies that are a little off, a little different from one another, they're really just pandering for who gets to be at the top of the hill, who gets to be king of the hill and in charge, because that's where the most money is at. Who is it that Mitt Romney is trying to cater to win over their votes? We're told
that's
the Latino community, right? The the Latin community, the immigrant community, we're told that. It's beat into us on a daily basis if you have the stomach to watch Fox News or CNN or any of the others. That's all we hear. You know, to hear to boil down the current argument du jour, this election is going to be decided by illegals. That's what they're telling you.
Well, that's my. I mean, geez, you know, people may think I'm crazy for saying this, but you know, why don't we just call it the day and make Mexico the 51st state of the union and just call it the day and go on from there? The hell with it. Just let Mexico become the 51st state of the union.
Well, you know, that would go a long way towards the North American Union, which they're working on anyway, with Mexico and Canada.
Well, that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, they're all here. We're all in North America. I mean, you got the Americas, you got Mexico, Canada, and the United States of America. So, yeah, let's go for the gusto. Let's make Canada the 52nd state of the union, and negate President Obama's 57 states of the United States of America.
Well, I think I think they want to go a little bit further, Robert. I think the idea is to make a North American Union, much like the European Union, and you know, all under the purview of the United Nations.
Well, let them fall, let them just fall where they lay, as far as I'm concerned.
In the interest of globalization and global governance, of course, for the betterment of mankind and the planet. Let's not forget the planet. You know, the planet's more important than an individual human being. Of course, that's kind of an oxymoron, because without the planet, we don't survive. And you know, it's just quite that simple. But they really push this agenda. And, you know, I kind of shift topics here. And I don't like to go after individual people when it comes to all the goings on, because from where I sit, there's enough guilt to go around. You know, they all just need to share in their own part of taking part in the scam that they're pulling on the American people. But I decided to do a little investigative work when I was up at the gym today, you know, doing my little workout thing. And on Fox News, they've got, you know, they're talking to Daryl Issa and another congressman. I can't remember his name. He looks a lot like John Lewis, but it wasn't John Lewis from Georgia. And they were discussing the whole Fast and Furious Project Gunrunner debacle. And I think it's only a debacle because somebody got caught, okay? And because someone got murdered, and he happened to be a Border Patrol agent, an American. One side wants to make political hay, while the other side wants to blame their opponents. Well, they started it, you know. Bush did it first. And you know what? I don't doubt that that's true. I don't doubt for a moment that this whole, you know, linebacker, quarterbacker, and all these other stupid projects were going on. It totally circumvents the fact that regardless of who's sitting at the helm of the Oval Office, our government is actively engaged in violating our laws. That's nonsensical. But anyway, I digress. I decided to do, you know, I asked myself a question. Well, who exactly is Eric Holder? I mean, who is the guy? What do we know about him? What do you know about Mr. Holder?
Also, I know that he was attorney in Chicago and Obama's friend before he got elected as Attorney General. That's all I knew about the guy.
Well,
we know about Obama. We didn't know about anything about Obama, but that he was a state senator and a community organizer. So, I mean, you know,
You're partially correct. Holder was an attorney, but he wasn't an attorney in Chicago. He was an attorney at the law firm of Covington and Burling in Washington D.C.
I take back my statement,
and
I'm wrong.
I'm not pointing that out because you're wrong. I'm pointing it out because.
No.
If you do a little research on Covington and Burling, you find out, you know, what this law firm is all about, who they represent, and it seems to me to be a who's who's list. You know, some of their former attorneys that worked at Covington and Burling were names like Michael Chertoff. And Michael Bowden, and a guy named Donald Hess, who was Alger Hess's brother.
Yeah, but didn't Donald Hess have anything to do with Whitegate with Clinton?
Was that a connection? Absolutely, and there's a lot of other things that it seems that this law firm has an interesting client list, and you know it seems that every one of these attorneys, not everyone, but a good number of them, and the ones we know of, became judges, and they were appointed to federal district judgeships under various presidents, such as Clinton and Obama. Covington and Burling have a very interesting client list, like XE, formerly Blackwater, and the Southern Peru Copper Corporation, Philip Morris, Bank of America, Deer & Company, Apple, General Electric, Eli Lilly, IBM, Microsoft, Morgan Stanley.
It's amazing.
Did I mention Halliburton and Philip Morris?
Oh, well, those are the bad companies that are involved in cap and trade, so to speak. You know. What do you want?
And what most of these companies do. They're not necessarily hiring Covington and Burling to represent them in a legal dispute. It appears that many of these companies are hiring them to lobby Washington. And Congress.
Well, what do you think it was? What do you think one of the medical companies were in there? That's all they do. The medical companies are strangulating healthcare. I told Bill Stroud this before. I said, when I start have to pay $118 for water a month, this is a sad day in hell, excuse so to speak. Agenda 21 has already pushed a button on the city of Venice with the water bill.
It really torques me when we get in here and start researching some of this stuff, and you understand the game that's being played, where both sides are certainly playing the fascist game, where these large corporations are buying influence, and they're doing so through this law firm, and interestingly enough, this law firm seems to be replete with U.S. district judges and attorney generals and assistant attorney generals and U.S. prosecutors. And it's bothersome to me that this all comes, and I could go on for an hour and a half reading just the stuff that I printed out. And I would encourage people to go do some homework and, you know, look up some of these people. You remember the Abscam deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just on and on and on.
So you gotta retract that and look up and see if this law firm has anything to do with the healthcare bill and see if you come up with something interesting on that one too.
Well,
I did find
some interesting information on their pro bono work. And what they like to do for free, you know, as if it's free. But it seems that in their pro bono work, they represent a lot of gay and lesbian activists and, you know, civil rights violations and those kind of things that, of course, you know, the ACLU and the NAACP aren't able to take up for everybody. You know, so definitely we need these other folks out there. And it's interesting because Holder actually joined the U.S. Department of Justice, ironically enough, in the public integrity section from 76 to 1988.
Public
and
integrity.
Ronald Reagan appointed Holder to serve as a judge of the Superior Court for the District of Columbia.
Isn't that ironic?
Isn't it, though? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Really?
Yes.
Ronald Reagan, good old Ronnie boy.
And, you know, Holder, he really represented some big names. Merck is one of the names. I don't know if you're surely you're familiar with Merck. They're a large pharmaceutical company.
Absolutely. They've been trying to fry Merck for a long time because of Merck and Pfizer are one of the two top pharmaceutical companies in the United States.
Yes, and Eli Lilly.
And Eli Lilly. That's number three. But they've been trying, you know. The government has been going after Merck, Pfizer, and Eli Lilly since I can remember. You know, since my father was even in practice. I mean, the government has been going after those three companies. You know, this is no news. You know, this has been going on for years.
Well, I also find it interesting that his former law firm, Covington & Burling, also represent several Guantanamo inmates. Yeah, I mean, this is irony. You talk about a conflict of damn interest. And, you know, and you look at the ideology, and I've got a quote from Holder, said that, basically, they were arguing in the Heller case in D.C., which was the gun ban case, that the position of the Department of Justice from the time of Franklin Roosevelt through Clinton was that the Second Amendment does not protect an individual right to keep and bear arms for purposes unrelated to a state's operation of a well-regulated militia. Now there's a twisting. That is an absolute twist. You talk about, you know, Operation Twist. There you go. That's a twist. And Holder said that overturning the 1976 law, I didn't know Congress could pass a law or Washington D.C. could pass a law overturning an American Second Amendment right. But he said overturning the 1976 law opens the door for more people having more access to guns and putting guns on the streets.
Then he goes and does what he did the Fast and Furious, so to speak.
Clearly they were using that. I think they were using an existing program so that they could, A, blame the Bush administration, and B, They were trying to undermine the Second Amendment.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it really hurts me all day on the news today. All I could hear is that, you know, people are saying, how can you blame Obama when the Congress didn't allow all those policies go into play? You know, people were emailing Fox News, and someone comes back and says, well, Obama and Congress does not choose, the Senate has not passed a bill since Obama's been in office. So, therefore, you know, either Congress is wrong, or the Senate is wrong, or the whole government system is wrong. I mean, that's my point. I mean, you know, nothing's getting done. So there's another thing that I saw, which really, really upset me, Ron. It's that this engineering guy was been out of job for 3 years. So the wife asked him how come there hasn't been any jobs for engineers, and Obama has enough nerve to say because there's no more high tech jobs left. We're working on the high tech jobs. Well, then I'm working on a high tech job. Why should I even bother? Why should I even go through this stuff? You know, that's what I'm asking myself right now. Why should I even bother?
Well, you know, I think a career choice is a personal thing. And, you know, some people look at, oh, man, I can make a lot of money doing this. But if that's what you're after, you know, I think most of those folks are sadly disappointed. Some of them aren't. But, you know, like some of the traders and things like that, you know, that they didn't start out life in college wanting to work on Wall Street. But, you know, a lot of them got degrees in engineering and mathematics and found out that it dovetailed very well with making gobs of money working on Wall Street.
I mean, I have a student in Atlanta. We've been conversing. Who's a podiatrist? Who's already doctored this course? I mean, my God, you know. So she's changing her career. I mean, being a podiatrist for me, the reason why she's like me. We cannot do the clinical work anymore. We cannot do the heavy lifting. We cannot do the. We just got burned out on the clinical aspect of our professions. We can't do it no more. We're worn out. We're tired. We're burnt. You know? It's time for the new generation to take over that stuff. Leave us alone. You know?
Well, we would hope that the next generation would step up, but it doesn't seem that they are. And, you know, Miss Terry kind of covered that in her show on Thursday, that the me generation, or whatever they're calling them now, the lost generation, I don't know, they really don't have any aspirations for, you know, employment. It's almost like they're expecting mommy and daddy to just continue giving them everything they want, because after all, they deserve it, right? There's you don't have to earn anything now. It's a right. You should be given all these things. There's no reason to go out and get gainful employment after all. I mean, that's just stupid. You know, they even those children that come from homes that are predominantly conservative are falling into the ideology of social welfare, that the world owes them something. You know, if they're going to get a job, they want to at least start out making, you know, $80,000 to $100,000 a year.
Yeah, right. Well, I never saw that, and I probably will never will. That's beside the point. The point is, I survived, and I'm still making it. And as long as you keep on standing and keep afloat, you're okay. But it's getting harder, Ron. It's getting it's getting tougher. It's getting tougher each month. It's not a bed of roses no more now.
I don't think it ever was a bed of roses. I think it was a bill of goods that the American people bought into. And it's all predicated on easy credit money. And, you know, the people, I think, are finally waking up to the realization that they're debt slaves.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and the ones that are not debt slaves are suffering for it, basically.
You know,
that's my point of view. I'm paying taxes for other people's bad decisions. You know, basically. I mean, I'm trying to do the right thing, but I'm getting reamed for other people doing the wrong thing. It doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, that's basically what Obama's philosophy is in common sense terms. You know.
Well, and it's, you know, that's the thing. I don't think it's just his philosophy. I think he's just taking it to the next level, much like Lincoln did. I see the parallels between Obama and Lincoln, and they're stark. They stand out. But, you know, Obama is certainly not the first one to come into the office of president and just bastardize the public trust wholesale with the assistance of Congress. And you were talking earlier that, you know, they're all pointing the finger of blame. Well, it's Congress's fault. Well, it's the administration's fault. Well, you know what? It's our fault. It's our fault because we go along with it. We don't stand up and tell them, you know, give them the middle finger, which is what we ought to be doing. Well, I'm dead serious. You know, this country wasn't founded to have a national government to dictate every segment of your life and every aspect of your life to you. That wasn't the idea of America. And I'm sick and tired of settling for less than. I don't want to settle.
Yeah.
Stand up and exercise your right, well, you know, the government, just in the criminal division of the Department of Justice, they've got over 600 lawyers. And they have 94 U.S. attorneys throughout the several districts in the states. Well, you know, that sounds an awful lot like what the founders were charging King George with, sending out swarms of his agents to eat out their substance. Well, that's exactly what your federal government has done. And that's why I said on the last show, we need to be, you know, clearly Washington, D.C., that bell has already been rung and you can't unring it. So we need to be looking at our local politicians and holding them accountable and telling them, hey, why in the hell do you guys keep going along with this garbage? I mean, we know why, because there's kickbacks, there's money involved. So we need to be putting pressure on our local state legislators to remove that money, to pass laws to make it illegal for them to accept federal funds for various improvement projects, the very thing that Jefferson warned about and argued against, and the very thing that Hamilton was all in favor of. Because he knew what would happen. You would end up with exactly what you have. You have these huge corporations represented by huge law firms. These huge law firms, like the one where, you know, Holder came from, this Covington and Burling. Well, they're attorney mills. They turn out U.S. government employees. High-level U.S. government employees, and they're also lobbyists. So, you know, when people ask, well, where in the hell, you know, we know Barney Frank and Nancy Pelosi weren't smart enough to write that bill. Where did it come from? Well, now you know where it came from. It came from the likes of Covington and Burling and their team of attorneys.
They probably wrote the health care bill, too, on top of it.
Precisely. That's precisely it. I have sat in on sessions here in Atlanta at the Capitol and heard some of the legislation being introduced and knew damned good and well that it didn't come from any of these pea brains sitting in their legislative office up there in Atlanta. It was too well written. It was far too well written. I've met a lot of these people. They're not stupid, but they're not terribly impressive.
Yeah, but didn't Hillary work at that law firm too?
What's that?
Didn't Hillary work at that law firm too?
No, Hillary works at the Rose Law Firm.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure.
And, you know, you remember back when Clinton was in office, there was this problem of one of his big contributors, a guy named Mark Rich, who Clinton pardoned.
That's right.
And his attorney, Mark Rich's attorney, was a guy named Jack Quinn, who just so happens to be was a former White House counsel from 95 to 96. He was in contact with Eric Holder testing the water for the political viability of the presidential pardon. Quinn asked Holder for advice as to how he should proceed. According to Quinn, Holder advised Quinn to circumvent standard procedures by submitting the pardon petition directly to the White House.
It's just truly amazing.
So, I mean, you know, these guys are thick as thieves, and you go look and, oh, gee, there's Michael Chertoff. He worked for the firm. Paul Tagliabue, the former NFL commissioner. And, I mean, there's a long list. I encourage anyone, you know, go out there and do a little bit of investigation on Covington and Burling and on Eric Holder and find out who he is and his ideology. You know, and I mean, this goes back to their underground and communists, back to Alger Hiss. I'm like, really? To me, this is it's incredible.
It is. It's wow. You know, I don't know anymore. I just look back of everything that has happened since Clinton, or even way before Clinton. I mean, you're right. The only people that you can blame is us. We put them in office, but we still weren't savvy enough or smart enough.
Well, I don't think we put them in office. Quite honestly, I don't think that for the most part that if you and it looks like we lost Robert. Hopefully, he'll call back in. You know, in all honesty, when you look at the voting system and politics in this country, I have a hard time saying that the average American has voted in any of these clowns because the whole process is so utterly corrupt. It's disgusting. And when you see the good old boy network up close and personal, you know, not behind the scenes, but you're right there in the thick of it, it's just so patently obvious the manipulation that goes on. And it is, without a doubt, you know, we've heard the term trickle-down economics. Well, this is trickle-down politics. Trickle-down kickbacks, bribes. It's trickle-down politics. It all flows out of the big house in Washington, D.C., and it trickles down to all the supporters in the various states and various counties. And this is exactly the thing that Jefferson knew would happen if we ascribed to the Hamiltonian system of government. And it's the same exact reason why all of the ideologues like Lincoln, like Henry Clay, like Clinton and others, all pushed very, very hard to institute that form of government. They knew it was a huge payoff. Look, most of the American people are not so foolish that they don't recognize that many of these politicians go into office as a pauper and come out multimillionaires. I mean, let's be honest. Barack Obama was a community organizer and the guy's a multimillionaire. Really? It doesn't add up, folks. I mean, at least with the Clintons, you could say, well, they were attorneys, both of them. And so, you know, it's at least plausible that they were going to make some good money being attorneys. You almost expect it. But most attorneys aren't millionaires. Ask them. Now, that's not to say that most attorneys don't make a decent living. I wouldn't say an honest living, but at least a decent living. You know, they're not out there scrapping for change. There might be a few of those, and those are probably the only honest ones that remain. It's just very frustrating when you begin to look into these things and the connection, the dots are just lining up like ants coming out of an ant colony. And, you know, they love to rattle back and forth and point the finger of blame at one another. And they've got to be sitting back after hours just yucking it up, having cocktails, laughing about how stupid and gullible the American public is. And we've got you back, Mr. Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Ron. Yeah, I mean, you know what I was trying to say is that right now I'm outside checking out the tropical storm Debbie and the winds are really kicking up pretty high here. But at any other rate, just going to hit Louisiana, so the governor there has got a state of emergency over there. So far, it hasn't cleaned my house yet, but I'm trying to protect my house and keep it safe. But do you know, it's all what I heard this weekend. You know, in a couple of days, our fate of our health is going to be on the line, basically by Supreme Court.
I agree with you, and you know, the very idea that the Supreme Court is the only and final arbiter of what's constitutional and what's not is the biggest crock of baloney on the face of the earth. I mean, let's look at it logistically and logically, pragmatically for a moment if we could. And you have a union, all right? That was the whole purpose. That's what it says in my constitution, my pocket constitution, says that in order to form a more perfect union, establish domestic tranquility, and promote the general welfare, we do hereby establish and ordain the Constitution of the United States of America. Well, all right, so it's a union. Well, what is a union? A union is a collection, in this case, of free and independent nations. We call them states. But nonetheless, they're foreign nations. They're foreign to one another. The state of Nebraska is a foreign government to the state of Georgia. It's really pretty straightforward and simple. Okay? So, here they come together collectively, and they put together this constitution, and they all have their own understanding of what it says and what it means. And so the government comes out with some new law, and a state says, well, wait a minute, that's not the authority we granted to the Congress. We never granted that authority. Who's in a better position to determine whether or not that law just passed is constitutional or not? Well, I thought the Declaration of Independence said that, you know, governments derive their just authority from the consent of the governed. The idea of the central government was to govern the states in matters, in specific areas, matters of defense and commerce. But the state can step up and say, well, wait a minute, we did not specifically grant you this authority, and therefore we see your new law as an overreach and unconstitutional, and we're not going to abide it. That's the idea. That's how it's supposed to function. Now, it was never intended for the federal government to be able to then in turn sue that state in a federal court. The federal court has no jurisdiction in that state. None. The state is the sovereign.
True.
You look at Arizona's immigration law. That's why I raised a fuss when Brewer walked into that federal court and answered to the charge at bar. Are you kidding me? If I'm governor, I'm gonna hold a press conference and tell them, you know, the federal district court can do whatever they darn well please, but they'll do it without me present. And whatever ruling they have, that's their problem, not mine. They'll have to rule in absentia because I won't be present. They have no jurisdiction in my state. And they certainly have no jurisdiction over me as the head of this state. This is purely a state matter. Congress has utterly failed to enforce the law, so I'm in a position where I must. I'm under oath and obligation to do so. And for the government to turn around and the federal government to turn around and try to indicate otherwise is just pure ignorance.
Oh, my Lord. I tell you. I can't wait to hear the decision. How do you think it's
going to
pan out?
Not certain. And they're all staying very tight-lipped about it. And I've told you guys before that I don't, you know, don't hold your breath because they're right liable to rule that it is constitutional. And Miss Ruth Bader Ginsburg made the point numerous times. During the testimony, she inquired, how is this different than Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid? And she's 100% factually correct. I have to agree with her. They said, well, you know, this is unprecedented. This is the first time Congress has ever dictated or mandated that the American public has to purchase a product. Really? What the hell is Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security?
Well,
you're purchasing government benefits. You're purchasing government benefits, no matter how you look at it. It's a flipping tax. And, you know, Obama played coy all along. Oh, we're not going to argue that it's a tax. And I'm like, horse crap. Of course they're going to argue it's a tax because that's the winning argument.
It is a tax. They raised my medical insurance. They raised everybody's. It's not only mine, Ron. They raised everybody's medical insurance. One girl, from what I understand, paying $700 a month for her medical insurance. How the hell are you supposed to live? How is anybody, and I said this before, if I'm making $50,000 a year, and a family of four is making $50,000 a year, and all this stuff is coming around depending on where you live. But when you live in Florida, what they're trying to do in Florida, even my pool man gets it. What they're trying to do in Florida is making the middle class not live in Florida no more. So they're basically trying to eliminate the middle class of Florida, all right? And that's going to happen soon.
Well, they're trying to eliminate. Look, they're trying to eliminate the middle class throughout the entire continent. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, they don't want a middle class. They want the ruling elites and everybody else.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
So,
and if you're making over $50,000 a year, you're one of those evil rich people that Obama would love to target. Although he won't say that. You know, he'll keep the bar at $250,000 a year, and I'm here to tell you, that's not rich.
No, it's not. It's not. It really isn't. I mean, my God, I mean, after I pay everything off and everything, I have to sit here and sometimes eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches sometimes till the end of the month. You know, I cook for one person and everything, but my God, and if it wasn't for Leona and Kathy, and it wasn't for them coming into my life, I mean, they're making life easier for me. I mean, you know, but before, you know, a family of four, man, my heart goes out. My heart goes out to them. I don't know how in the hell they do it. I really, honest to God, don't know.
I really don't. Kyra was putting up in the chat room that the new level rich cutoff is 90K. And I told her, I said, tell me about it. I'm over that by a long shot. I'm not wealthy. I'm not rich. My wife and I make a decent living. You know, and we worked very hard to accomplish that. She graduated high school. I didn't. I didn't graduate high school. I went and took a GED, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
But we're both in upper level management at this point. And,
you
know, I'm down talking to my accountant, trying to figure out how do I minimize my tax exposure. I mean, you know, they did a great job. I had to take money out of, you know, my retirement investment to pay to have an accountant do my taxes. My effective tax rate is 29%.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I don't understand where these people get this argument that, you know, for me, 30% is not my fair share, but for them, 10% is their fair share. How in the hell do you make that distinction?
That's what I don't get either, Ron. Because you and I are paying our fair share of taxes.
I think I'm paying more than my fair share, and we're paying for government programs that I don't believe in, and that shouldn't exist, that are illegal by the letter of the law, and yet they still exist. And we're not even paying for those programs. If you go back to the Grace Commission report that was commissioned by President Reagan, they undertook a study of individual income tax dollars. And at the conclusion of the study, what they determined was not one penny of money that gets extracted from individuals through the income tax, not one cent goes to operate the government. Not one penny.
Yeah. It's the old saying from day one when I first came on the show. It's the Robin Hood game. It's taking it away from the rich, giving it to the poor, and they're doing I think they're doing a pretty good job of it right now. I mean,
what is, you know, we've glorified this idea of robbing from the rich to give to the poor. What a crock of crap. All they're doing is keeping the poor. They're just giving them a little higher living standard, and they're giving them incentive not to be wealthy or to go out and work and aspire to be something more than a little piglet sucking on the government teat.
I mean, When I came down to Florida, Ron, I came down to Florida in 1994. My father became ill and when he was diagnosed with lung cancer. Okay? And the only jobs that were paid decent was that's how I got into health care. When I first started in 1996, I was making $7 an hour, right? Then when I became a nursing assistant, I was making $10 an hour. That's all you're making down here is $10 an hour, $11 an hour. Some of the agencies are paying $12 an hour. Well, if you're making $12 an hour, let's say if you're making $15 an hour, that's probably you're close to making maybe $20,000 a year, not even that, probably $18,500, $19,000. You're probably making between $18,500 and $19,000 a year. Now, that's just one person. So if you got two people pulling that together, that making 40, both of them are making 40,000. Two people would have to make $40,000 a year. That's what two people are living off of in Florida. Period.
Oh sure, you know, and Kyra makes a great point that the cost of living in Florida is lower. You go to somewhere like New York, all right? You look at Long Island, and you look at the taxing scheme that those northern states have voted in year after year after year after year. I mean, all the New England states, those people are taxed to death, and they revel in it. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Other than just the prestige. You know, being in New York City, big flipping deal. I don't know why these people don't vote with their feet and their wallet and get the hell out of there.
Because they don't. They just want to live in New York. They think that's one of the reasons why. That's why I have Leonie in my life. I mean, that's one of the reasons why. I mean, my ex wanted me after 15 years. After 15 years of living with her, she had a piece of property in Warm Mineral Springs. She wanted me to sell my house. Instead of going to graduate school, she wanted me to sell my house, right?
Yep.
Making the same salary that I'm making. She's going to sell her property and go up to New York and live. Now, how long do you think those monies will last in New York? Not even a year, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Not even a year.
And
I'm serious.
Let me give you an example, okay, of what the income tax law does. Now, I know there are people out there that aren't smart enough or are too distracted, I should say, to sit down and figure it out, all right? But back in 1997 and before 97, I was an automotive technician. I did auto repair, and I was doggone good at it, and I'm still good at it. But I worked on a commission basis. Now, the last job I held before I went to work in management, I made $29.50 an hour flat rate. Now, for those that don't understand what flat rate is, when you take your car in for a repair, say your car needs a new starter, there is a labor manual that says that for your particular vehicle, to replace the starter takes 1 hour. Takes 1 hour to perform that job. So you bring your car in and I replace your starter and it takes me 15 minutes. I get paid 1 hour. Say it takes me three hours. I get paid one hour. Okay? But it didn't take me long to figure out that, number one, I could turn 43 hours in about 3 days. But it also didn't take me long to figure out that after taxes, on that 43 hours, I was making an effective rate of about $17 an hour. And if I went much beyond 43 hours, if I went up to, say, 45 hours, it went down to about $12 an hour. And if I went over 50 hours, it went to $8 an hour. And if I went to 53 hours, it went to about $6 an hour. And I said, well, who's dumb enough to stay at work and work yourself into the ground? And, you know, by the time you payroll comes around, you know, I would get 38 hours and take home about $1,000. I'd turn 52 hours and I'd take home about $1,250. And I'm like, okay, I don't need to be a mathematician to figure out that I'm not going to turn 53 hours a week. It's not in my best interest.
And then a crying shame.
It is. So you give people incentive not to be productive.
Exactly. That's the name of the game. Who's going to be more productive no matter what profession you choose? Who's going to be the hard worker, and who's going to be, quote, the inferior weed outs? You know, that's basically what it is. It's basically what it is. And you know, I mean, I had a long talk with this doctor, and you know that, you know, she's already gone through. She, after this course, you know, she'll be through with the core courses, which is the hardest. And now she's ready to. She's decided she doesn't want to do it no more after passing all the hard courses. I mean, my God. So I'm sitting here myself going, oh, man, you know, here I am, you know, 57, getting ready to be 57, and going through, you know, some health issues and going through financial stress, so to speak, and I'm saying, what's more important, my health or stress? At my age. Well, that should be a no-brainer, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. And I, you know, I try not to get stressed. And this forum is actually a good outlet for that, to get rid of some of that stress. And speaking of stress, we have the lovely Miss Linda Sills from the left coast, the land of fruits and nuts, Liberalville, California. Miss Linda, welcome aboard. How are you?
Thank you, sir, and hi, Robert, and everybody in the chat room. I'm trying to sign in and it's being very slow. I just came from a gathering down at the clubhouse, and I have some kind of funny stuff. It's funny because you talked about the land of liberals and fruits and nuts, because I'm sitting across the table from, we were talking about, you know, I told him that I was fighting against this green monster Agenda 21 thing, and he says, oh, then you and I won't agree on much, and I said, why? And he says, because I'm a socialist, and I said, oh, wonderful. I said, well, I don't agree with those tenets that they pretty much mirror communism. He says, I'm not a communist, you know. And I said, I do know that Agenda 21 and everything that's trying to do is pure evil, and I'm going to do everything that I can to stop it. I almost fainted. I was like, oh my God,
well,
I'm up against this.
You should have asked him. See, I would have been intrigued. Really, a socialist? What do you mean by that?
Oh, and he was talking about the word fairness, and so, but prior to all that, he gave me his card because we were talking about other stuff with the mobile home parks, and so, so I'm going to send him an email, and if he's, you know, I was not in a, you know, I was taken aback, so I wasn't prepared. God, I wish you'd have been there, because that would have been a real interesting day. Unbelievable, because if he's talking about fairness of outcome, then I disagree with him wholeheartedly. And then he was spouting.
That's exactly the question you have to ask. Well, what's fairness? What do you mean fairness? You know, define that for me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have, naturally, it takes me a few minutes by the time I get home to think of all this stuff. So I'm walking home from the clubhouse, and I thought, okay, sending him an email, and I'm going to be very polite and very professional, and I'm going to say, if you're talking about fairness of opportunity, I'm with you. But other than that, we're parting ways because this. And then he's spouting some craziness about, his lineage goes back to people signing the Declaration of Independence and all this nonsense, which I find highly.
Well, how was that fair? I mean, my God, they were depriving King George of his rightful subjects. That surely couldn't have been fair. I mean, that doesn't sound very socialist to me.
Oh, it was just unbelievable. I mean, I was shocked. And then I did tell him, I said, he says, I don't believe in communism. I says, well, Karl Marx, and I said, and I'll quote him, that the goal of socialism is communism. And he says, Marx was an idiot. And I says, no, he was actually quite brilliant. I did get that much out. And I said, I don't agree with him, of course. And I said, and guess who took up all of his, tenets to heart? And then he got up and did something else because we couldn't talk anymore. So,
I think you should invite him to call into the radio show tomorrow.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
These are the people that I want to know what makes them tick. It's not necessarily that I want to argue with someone.
I want to know.
I really want to pare down their ideology, and get into the conversation because I've found that a lot of people that claim to be socialist or mm-hmm. progressive liberal or whatever, when you actually strip away all the crap,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you start asking questions and you start presenting scenarios, they're not socialist at all.
Yeah, see, that's what I need to find out.
They are. They just believe that they are. And they fall into this garbage, but I promise you when it's applicable to their life, to their family, they have a completely different take on it.
Yeah, because I was pretty much on my tirade at this point, and I said, I don't think you know anything about this Agenda 21 thing. I said, have you seen the map? Have you seen what they want in store for? And he looked at me with this deer in the headlights, doesn't know what I'm talking about. Well, Wednesday, because he goes to all these meetings, he's going to see my map because I have the map, and I'm going to put it on the screen. And I'm going to talk, if I'm allowed to talk that day, I'm definitely going to do it. And tomorrow I'm going to the photocopy place and making sure I have my package together. I'm going to go to the third floor and make sure they have their handouts 2 days before that meeting, 2.5 days before that meeting, believe me. I'm not playing no more.
I look at the whole idea of socialism or communism or Marxism. They're all, they all hide behind the same general thesis, which is hogwash.
Right.
But nonetheless, for the greater good, for the collective, equality. And I like to ask these people, well, do you believe that there is a natural order to things in the universe and in the world? And, only an idiot would say, well, no, I think it's all subjective. Well, no, of course not. Look in nature. Look at any natural system. Go look at the Serengeti over in Africa and see how all these animals interact and the natural progression of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say, oh, well, you believe in survival of the fittest. Well,
absolutely.
Yes, in a sense, I do. And, the fittest of all fits are the humans. We are the most prolific animal, if you want to call us that, on the planet.
Right.
We're at the top of the heap. And within that structure of society, there are those that will and those that won't, and those that refuse to even try.
Right.
And if you're not willing to put forth the effort, why in the hell do you think it's right to get a bunch of people together and force me to supply you with what you're not willing to supply yourself with?
Exactly. And when you talk about that collective thing, that always raises my ire, because my question then is, how well did the collective farming work out in the Ukraine?
How well did it work out in the colonies, after Columbus dropped here?
Right.
We know how well it worked out. They were starving to death.
Well, the other thing that I before I went to this little soiree at the clubhouse, basically the mayor was there today, and I didn't talk anything on A21, but I did talk about the meetings and stuff coming up. And another councilwoman was there too. But what dawned on me, because I had this information a week ago, which was from Warren Duffy from Orange County, and he had discovered that the whole state of Alabama threw out Agenda 21 completely. There's not an ounce of ICLEI, not an ounce of any of this green monster in their whole state. So it dawned on me, okay, Linda, God has just given you the answer as to how to get through to these people. You write to the governor, you write to the state legislators in that state, and you ask them, how did you do it? Please, I'm going to beg them. I implore you, because I need to know.
Look, I can tell you exactly how they did it. Alabama is just a state full of dumb redneck hicks clinging to their guns and their Bibles, for God's sake. I mean, everybody knows these are a bunch of undereducated, inbred. They're all related. And I say that, of course, tongue in cheek. Even being from Georgia, we have a little rivalry going with Alabama. Georgia's windy because Alabama sucks.
Well, anyway, that's kind of, it's funny because I think I had sent you back that thing where that girl had done the lineage of the maternal side of the president, found that they were all related to some king back in England way back.
And, yeah, I think I actually forwarded that to you.
Yeah, and then I wrote back and said, oh, that explains the inbred psychopathic actions of these clowns.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep. here in Georgia, they talk about in Alabama they had high wind warnings last week. They said local papers said that the winds were so bad it blew the governor's mansion right off its wheels.
Was that a single wide or what?
Then there was a story about the two neighbors, one lived in Georgia and one lived in Alabama, and the guy in Alabama kept throwing dynamite in his neighbor's yard, and his buddy asked him, he said, what'd you do? He said, well, I just lit it and threw it back.
That's good.
That's funny.
There's tons of Alabama jokes, let me tell you. But, you're right that Alabama, they've got a lot of good things going for them.
Right.
And my wife and I have actually talked about moving to Alabama, a little farther south near L.A.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they call it out here, Lower Alabama. They call it L.A. So I always thought that was kind of cute.
Oh, my gosh, that's funny. Oh,
but
Lord.
At the same time, they turn around and they do bonehead stuff that just got to scratch your head and go, what the heck were you guys thinking?
I know, it's crazy. But I do need to have my questions answered on the A21 thing to find out how they did it, because I definitely need as much information as I can get. It's funny because this guy that was claiming to be a socialist was, throwing about names like Thomas Jefferson, and I said, oh, really? I said, I'll tell you something about Thomas Jefferson. I said, if he was here right now, I said, first I'd have to revive him with smelling salts, and then he'd pick up arms and start shooting people.
Yeah, he'd probably slap you across the head, buddy.
Anyway, I got that much in because I was pretty upset. Oh, my God.
Well, how many, and I'm wondering how many folks out there remember the Real ID Act.
Oh gosh, I remember hearing it.
Now
hearing
this,
of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now this goes back to 2005. and all the states, this was a thing that was passed by Congress, and all the states were supposed to comply with the Real ID Act as of 2010. But, you know, some states like Georgia and Alabama and some others told them, you know, we're not going to do that. And they pretty much gave the feds the finger. Now, this is the kind of thing that our state governments ought to be doing, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
There's only one problem with that. It completely took the Real ID Act right off of the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently renewed my permission to operate my private property on the public roadways here in Georgia, only to find out 2 weeks later that had I waited 2 weeks, I would have had to have gotten a Real ID Act compliant driver's license.
Ew.
That's all that's available. That's all that's available.
Are they microchip? Are they chip?
No, they do contain biometric information.
Oh, my God.
In, you know, those little, you see them all the time now for, like, the iPhones, the little square with the funny-looking, you know, black squares within them.
Yeah.
It's like an iPhone app recognition thing. Okay. And that's what contains the biometric information.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, you have to go to the state and you have to give them all of your pertinent documents.
Good.
Your Social Security, your birth certificate, all of those things.
Oh, my God.
Even if you've been living in Georgia your entire life and have had a driver's license for, you know, 35 years in the state of Georgia, nope, not anymore. You're going to have to go down and provide all your information over again. And, of course, this is done under the guise. This is done under the guise of trying to combat illegal immigration, and we already know what a joke that is.
Oh, my God. I know. I was just going to say, I mean, the borders have been open for 40 years. Nobody cares. The rhinos and the progressives alike, well, they're all, you know, those are progressives as well. They want their votes. They're just whores. I'm telling you, that's what it's all about. They pimp themselves out every time they open their mouths. Marco Rubio is no different. And I'm looking at the headline in the Union Tribune today in my Sunday paper, and the headline is GOP, the choice between Rubio and Condoleezza Rice. And I'm like, holy smoke, Mittens, Rice, and Rubio, that's three rhinos in one sentence. I almost threw up.
Well, now, I'm here to tell you, don't think for a minute, and I saw that on Condi. You know what? I think she would be the perfect choice for Romney as a VP. First of all, she's female. Second of all, she's black.
Right.
Third of all, she's a presumed conservative. She's little more than a neocon walk in my book. And, you know, if you go back to, I've talked about the timeline on Afghanistan previously. Condi Rice used to work hand in hand with another guy at a oil company called Unocal, and the guy she worked with was a fella named Hamid Karzai.
Oh my gosh!
And that was during the Clinton administration when they were trying to get the deal pushed through for a pipeline across Afghanistan.
Wow! Oh my gosh!
So, you know, Alan West, you know, Kyra's mentioning Alan West in there. I think Alan West is somebody of principle. And I don't think he would fit well in that slot as VP. And he obviously wouldn't fit well as president either, because you can't have principles and be president.
I know.
Fairly well demonstrated.
Yeah, it's enough to make your head just fly right off. I don't even, you know, every time I read the headline today and I'm going, oh, my God, we're doomed. We're just doomed. It's, you know, I guess my question is, you know, how long do we have before it melts down? What else do I need to know to prepare? Do I have to, you know, if I bug out, do I dump my cell phone? You
Well,
more.
You know, I'm going to I'm going to send you a link because I know you probably missed the start of the show. Where I put a link in the chat room, and I'm going to post it up there again because we've got some other listeners in the chat room that weren't there earlier.
Okay.
This is from Prison Planet, and what they're talking about is U.S. military armor rolling in the streets in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, my God.
And there was a local Fox affiliate that did a report on it. They were allowed to film the vehicles on condition that they did not divulge where they were at, where they were being kept at overnight. Now, of course, this is all part of normal drills. Okay.
Right.
So nothing to be alarmed about, folks, when you see U.S. military armor rolling up and down the interstate and up and down your neighborhood streets if you live in St. Louis, Missouri. Nothing to see here, folks. Just an ordinary, you know, this is just a drill. We're just playing war games. You know, it harkens back to the speech by Patrick Henry when he talked about all of the British ships and troops, and he says, what are they for? They're for us. Make no mistake about it. They are for us. We are the enemy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the report goes on to state, you know, and I didn't get to listen to the whole thing before I came on air, but, you know, he goes on to state or quote a general who's in charge of some of the operations. And they admit that, you know, part of what they're doing is working a plan in the case of financial travesty, economic unrest, that the military is going to come in and take over domestic policing operations. Well,
lovely.
That's a really polite way of saying we're going to declare frickin' martial law.
Yep. Bastard. Oh, so yeah, it's. Yeah, oh, they've been gearing up for this for quite a while. I mean,
well,
you know, I just clicked on the link. I saved it for later things.
And I don't know if you got to listen to the report the other day. Again, Alex Jones, and you know, I know not everyone.
I did. I think I saw that whole thing, yeah.
The one with Mancow Muller?
Yes.
Where they were literally scrambling his radio program when he had Jesse Ventura on there.
And especially when they talk about FEMA camps. And, it was bizarre. It didn't even matter whether Jesse was on there or not. Anytime you mention those words, they scramble you. Lovely.
So, I said it earlier, and I'll say it again, that everything that Obama is doing at this point, the administration is doing, appears to be trying to emulate the steps Lincoln undertook.
Yep. It's absolutely quite clear now. I mean,
we're talking about censoring the media. Now, as far as I know, none of them have been put in a military detention facility yet.
Yet.
Not that they would divulge that information.
Oh. Well, you know, I know Alex and the rest of them, Mueller and Jesse, are completely convinced that they off Breitbart.
I tend to agree with them.
Yeah, nothing would shock me. No.
Yeah, and this nonsense that came out on Breitbart.com after he died was not the smoking gun that he was talking about that he had.
Mm.
You know, this little film video clip of Obama hugging some socialist Marxist professor.
Yeah.
That was not the smoking gun that Breitbart was talking about.
Which we've never seen, obviously.
Right. And we'll probably never know what it was.
Mancow
didn't know what it was either, but he knew it was big, and it wasn't this little video soiree from, you know, 1982 or whatever.
Right, the 80s with what's-his-face. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a... pursued at some college, university.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, well, you know, Columbia University and or was it Harvard? You know,
well,
when Obama was studying law, and you know, I was talking earlier, and I'll give you some assignments. You need to look up, because I didn't know much about Eric Holder. I mean, you know, he's all in the news, and I hate to make it about an individual. But I thought, you know, I don't know much about him, so who is this guy, and how did he end up being in the position that he's in? And so I see that Holder worked as an attorney at this law firm, Covington and Burling, in Washington, D.C., and he represented clients like Merck and, you know, the NFL, among others. Rod Blagojevich also asked Holder to, or Covington and Burling and Holder, to act as a special investigator for the Illinois Gaming Board, but then that kind of fell through. But I got to looking at the list of current and former attorneys at this Covington and Burling, and I was really stunned to see some of the names on the list, like Michael Chertoff. So I would encourage everyone, you know, just go do a little looky-see around.
Yeah.
I know Wikipedia is not the best source of information,
right,
but you can certainly get some groundwork to start looking from there. And, you know, these people are, it's like a who's who of the movers and shakers within several administrations. And you know that Ronald Reagan actually appointed Eric Holder the Chief Justice of the court in the district court in D.C.?
Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. So, and clearly, if you look at this Covington and Burling law firm, you see that they actually pander to both sides. They're equal opportunity panderers. They had clients such as XE, the former Blackwater, Halliburton, Eli Lilly, Merck, the NFL, but they also do a lot of pro bono work, gay rights, and, you know, civil rights abuse cases and those kind of things. And they're really, they're pretty cozy with all of these folks. And they don't mind representing multinational corporations. And there was one, they merged with a Middle Eastern company, which I found very interesting.
My God.
And I don't remember the name of the company right now. I know I thought I printed it out, but I perhaps didn't. They were also representing Philip Morris.
Oh, my God.
And a United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, which the government had listed as a terrorist organization.
Good grief.
But, you know, I found it interesting that... the company, the founders of the company, let's see, Covington served as Chief Justice of the court from October 1st, 1914 to June 1st, 1918, when he resigned to practice law in Washington, D.C. He was a professor, now this is the guy that founded the company, he was a professor of law at Georgetown University from 1914 to 1919, and was appointed by President Woodrow Wilson as a member of the United States Railroad Commission.
Good grief.
He and Edward Burling established the law firm of Covington and Burling in 1919. Covington died in Washington, D.C. You know, I mean, these guys were right there in the thick of it with Mr. Wilson. And, you know, they've been playing the game, that law firm has been playing the game ever since. And they're located in Washington, D.C., and they're one of the largest lobbyist law firms in the country.
Wow.
So they don't care which bed they're getting into, but it certainly appears to me that they have a fondness for the socialist mattress versus the neoconservative mattress, but they're perfectly happy representing both sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the corruption is just unbelievable. One of the guys on the major radio stations, Michael Savage, he calls him Eric Withholder, withholding information. Oh,
well, it's pretty clear when you start looking at his career, and of course he worked with everyone's favorite Attorney General, Miss Janet Reno. Yeah, gosh, she was such a sweetie. I mean, she was the most sweetheart. You know, she really endeared herself to a lot of Americans, particularly those in Texas. You know, she was a staunch defender of religious freedom, you know, like the Branch Davidians. I mean, gosh.
Yeah, when she blew the whole thing up, right? Oh, my God.
Oh, nothing to see here, folks. We're just running a little drill. No problem.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The guy that is actually the San Diego, the sheriff, the major sheriff down here, which we know is he's not a constitutional sheriff. His name is Bill Gore. His background was tied with, I think he was part of the FBI sting on Waco. Absolutely. So he's got a lot of dirty laundry in his basket. And we tried to get rid of him a couple years ago, but we couldn't get Jay LaSure, who would be going to the California Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association meeting next September. And we've tried. I mean, I wish I could clone Sheriff John Loping from Siskiyou County and bring him down here, believe me.
Well, you know, it's funny. Our good sheriff right here in Cherokee County made national headlines, and he even made the front page of the HuffPo on AOL. He's being challenged by a gentleman named David Waters, who actually had asked my wife to give me his contact information, and I have it, and I've tried to contact him a couple times, but he hasn't gotten back to me. He was wanting to reach out to the Ron Paul community and the Patriot community to try and get our support for his run for sheriff. Nonetheless, our illustrious sheriff, Roger Garrison, and you may have seen the story on AOL or Huffington Post, had some very unflattering pictures of him from an old Halloween costume party dressed up in a KKK outfit.
Oh, Lord.
And, of course, he said, you know, that he was emulating a scene from the movie Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles.
Oh, my gosh.
Him and another guy.
Wow.
Which I thought was hilarious. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. you know, Brooks, if nothing else, was an equal opportunity racist. He loved to make fun of everybody.
Good grief.
I really like that. And that's where I get a lot of my humor. So, Robert, you forgive me. Of course, I always chide Robert for being, you know, part Jewish. It was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. It's when the black settlers were circling their wagons, you know, and the Indians, and there's Mel Brooks playing one of the Indians, and he says, "Oi, they're darker than us."
That's right. That was funny.
I love that scene. But, you know, he found the humor in the whole racist thing.
Right.
And it just really put it out there for how ridiculous it truly is. And that's what I really, really enjoyed about him. And my God, can you imagine them making a movie like that today? The outcry from the Janine Garofalos of the world.
Yeah.
You know, they use the N-word prolifically throughout the movie. And, you know, that would just never work today.
Oh, the screaming would be heard on Jupiter.
Hey, Ron. You know, I went to Miami last weekend, right?
Uh-huh.
And I sat just up for about 3 or 4 hours, you know, swimming in the pool. And I'm just almost as not as proud as Leon.
He what?
He's almost as tan as his Polynesian girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
Jesus called me a little, you know what?
So what you're saying, Robert, is that somewhere in the Spanish Jewish tradition, there might be some Kinta Kunte in there as well.
I forgot to tell you that most of my relatives on the Franco side of the family, my grandmother's mother, were Francos. And lo and behold, first and second cousins I haven't even met in Africa yet.
Wow.
Well, I'm
true.
Sure.
That's where all the Spanish Jews migrated.
I am certain that a good number of you have seen the video of the angry black man that's been going around.
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Oh, my goodness.
I haven't seen it.
Linda, if you've got that, forward it to Robert.
Okay. I'll try to look up in the archives. Okay.
This guy, let me tell you, this guy makes more sense than any one I've seen in a long time, and I think it's awesome. And I'm going to attempt to get him to come on one of the shows.
Awesome. You know what? There was two videos. One was a short one where he was doing with his, you know, black dialect, and then there was the long one where he was talking normally, and it was like listening to a very tan Thomas Jefferson. It was absolutely amazing. Or a Frederick von Hayek. I'm serious. He gets it. The guy absolutely gets it. The wire.
Yeah, the one I saw, you know, he was sitting in his car, and he was talking about, you know, what the hell happened to common sense? And
right.
He really went on a very... yeah, I don't know. No, Oz, that's certainly not that one. He just went on to really jackslap, you know, the race pimps like Jesse Jackson
right.
and Al Sharpton
yeah.
and others. And it was really refreshing to hear, because that's a conversation that I've tried to have with others,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's kind of odd. There's a couple of other hosts on Freedomizer that are back, and
uh-huh.
I get along with them wonderfully, and I think they're both fairly conservative. But when we start talking about quote unquote black issues, they kind of pull back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand that. I mean, it is what it is. Let's put it out there on the table and let's discuss it, you know, rather than trying to put up these walls or justify, you know, one method of behavior versus another. And that's what I really found refreshing about the guy's video, is that, you know, he called him out and he said, you know, y'all are acting like we're still in the days of slavery. He said, ain't none of you sitting in the back of the damn bus.
Yep, exactly.
This
I know.
This ain't the 1960s. I mean, you know, so I'd like to get him on the program.
That was great.
I think he'd be a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, well, you know, tomorrow I've got a million things to do, but I'll definitely be on your show, and I will email Jimmy, this guy that called himself socialist. I would definitely have him call in if he'll do it. That would be
absolutely
amazing.
And you know, make sure to, you know, you got to try and be sweet.
I know.
And not, you know, bring up the fact that, you know, you're a raving socialist, dude. We're like arch enemies. And, you know, I'd tell him, no, I think you're wrong to believe that we wouldn't have a lot of common ground. And maybe, you know, that's what I like to try and do, get these people on.
Right.
And let's figure out, you know, where is it that
right.
we're actually divided?
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And why? And
no,
why
like,
are we divided
on this? I'd like to know that question myself.
Yeah. Because if
I
we
really
don't...
would.
Well, I truly do. If we don't have the conversation, if we don't ask the questions,
right.
okay, then we're never going to come to a resolution. We're never going to come to an understanding, some kind of mutually beneficial understanding where
sure.
we actually sit back and say, well, wait a minute, you know, I've had this all wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and so instead of attacking one another just because we put a label on something, let's actually look at the individual and what their beliefs and views really are, what their opinion really is. And
okay.
And maybe we can find some common ground and realize that we're not so far apart and we're really not enemies after all.
Exactly. That's the point. You know, I don't know if he's a raving socialist. It just, you know, I don't know what all of his background. I don't know what he's read or anything like that because we didn't get into any of that. We didn't
precisely
get that far.
Precisely.
So,
and that's the conversation we need to have.
Right.
You know, because clearly he's having a reaction to what you're stating. You know, you're stating
right.
your position, and he's having a negative reaction to it. And I think it's just that we have maybe a different idea of how to achieve the same goal.
Right.
You know, or
well,
what socialists believe is the goal anyway.
Yeah. What I kind of took away just on the surface, because, you know, that's as far as we got, was that there's a fundamental split, you know, I mean, from what I've read, of course, in if you call yourself a socialist and I call myself, you know, a freedom fighter, what I call myself now, you know, it just seems to me that there is definitely a fundamental ideological difference, and that maybe because of the way I feel about pure Marxism, the never the twain's going to meet. You know, you know what I'm saying? If you're
right.
If you're that far down the road and thinking of collectivism and all that fairness stuff, and you're not going back to the founding principles and understanding what was going on at the time, then then it's going to be hard for me to sit down and have a pleasant conversation.
But see, I don't think it is, and that really segues into something that wanted to talk about, and this is, I think, a perfect example, although not socialist versus, you know, independent freedom, but certainly just as stark a contrast. I've spoken before about the preterist view
right.
versus the futurist view. Now, I've got a very good friend of mine, or I consider him a good friend, named Dean Shook, and he does a radio program on Blog Talk.
Right.
He's on tonight. Matter of fact, just about the time my show ends, his show is starting. And
okay.
he does an end times ministry. So he's preaching the futurist, we're in the end times. And I don't believe that. I believe something different. He and I are both able to have conversation.
Sure.
And what you're talking about, someone that believes themselves to be a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, and they believe in these fairness doctrines and things, as I pointed out to Dean last night, I see the same ideology, okay, or the same methodology, I should say, in those avowed socialist, communist, Marxists, as I do the futurists, okay? Now, what I mean by that is, why do people believe in the futurist doctrine of biblical prophecy? Well, if you really sit down and ask folks, that's because that's what they've been taught.
Right.
Every time they attended church or Sunday school, the whole story was centered around this one doctrine that, you know, that the end time is coming, Christ hasn't returned yet, so on and so forth. Read the book of Revelation. That's the time we're in right now. Look, Syria has to be wiped off the map. It says so in the Bible for the second coming of Christ to occur. Look at where we're at. Syria is under attack, so on and so forth. But the reason that we look at the Bible through that lens, that's what we've been taught. So as we read it, we're seeing the similarities to our own time and saying, of course, this is the way it was written. That's the way it was going to be. And our minds are closed to the idea that there's this other school of thought out there that is completely opposite of that. And
right.
I see the same thing with the socialists. Versus, you know, those of us that are, you know, not socialist or anti-socialist or you know, freedom-minded, Jeffersonian-minded. It's not that the socialists just have, they have all this knowledge and they know exactly the path they're on and why. It's what they believe in because it's what they've been taught, what they've been led to believe,
right,
not necessarily what the truth is.
Exactly.
I have a problem with that, Ron.
What's that?
Because the socialists that I've come across, and Linda, I want you to ask this: when you said socialists, he said fair. What did you say? Fairness on? Repeat what you said. Fairness of what?
Oh, fairness of opportunity versus fairness of outcome.
Fairness of opportunity versus fairness of outcome is a true definition of social justice. That is what he is referring. That's what he is referring to, Linda. So he is a socialist.
Well, they didn't, as I understand it, Robert, as I understood Linda to say that she didn't really have the opportunity to question him as to what he meant by fairness, whether he was talking fairness of outcome or fairness of opportunity. And,
right,
you know, one of the things I would say to every socialist on the planet is fairness of opportunity is your parents didn't abort you when you were a fetus, and you're in the world and you drew your first breath and now you've grown into an adult human being and you've had the same opportunity regardless of your upbringing or your surroundings. You have a brain.
Mm-hmm.
You have two eyes, two ears, two legs, two arms,
mm-hmm,
10 fingers, 10 toes. You know, I mean, seriously, everybody, not everyone has that. We could look at someone like, you know, everyone's favorite to bash on, the dude in the wheelchair, whose name escapes me right now, the physicist, the Stephen Hawking.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, I mean, when you look at someone like a Stephen Hawking, you cannot then tell me that everyone doesn't have the opportunity. Now, granted, those children that have been aborted as a fetus, murdered before they were even born, they have no opportunity.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not trying to descend into an anti-abortionist rant as much as I am trying to explain the fact that, you know, we all have the same opportunity. We may not have the same conditions. We may not, you know, some are born into money and some are born into poverty. Some are born into physical defects and some are born with perfect genetics.
Right.
And some are born as, you know, half Jewish, half Spanish. I don't know.
Oh, wow. So what I was going to say, Linda,
go ahead.
I'll take that with the good. But you got to ask me this question for me. This is what this is for. Being as a man, I'm Jewish and half Spanish. Being as a man, you got to ask him this question because it's imperative. And the socialists that I've dealt with that are around in my area have this ideology that what's mine is mine is what's yours is yours. Period. That's what they believe in. And if that's the case...
Oh, no. You got that wrong, Robert. I'm sorry.
No.
They have the ideology that what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I meant to say. I just had a dyslexic attack and reversed it. But that's what you really have to ask him. And if they believe in that, if he does believe in that, then you know he is a blatant socialist. Number one, and number two, that's a guy that you really cannot even have a debate with. I don't think. And if he does come on the show, that would be pretty enlightening.
Yeah. Well, it would be difficult to have a conversation. Because, I mean, for me, because, you know, Ron has become so good at this, especially on the air, to just take a breath and not go nuts like I do, and, you know, he can actually ask questions and get a response,
right.
But he, you know, which is great. It's a great talent, and I've got to hone that for myself because I'm going to need it, believe me.
Yeah, you got to look. You got to peel away all the BS and don't let them hide behind lies and half truths.
Right.
You know, get it out there in the open. Let's examine it. You just peel it down to the barest essentials. And you
okay.
know, when you get them there, you know, they come to a realization that, you know, boy, that really sounds bad if I say that. So they're either going to lie or they're going to tell the
yeah.
truth. And,
yep,
and if they,
absolutely.
You know, but what you're doing is stripping away all the little self-justification walls that
mm-hmm.
they've built for themselves so that to insulate themselves to believe that they're doing something for the greater good when, in fact, they, when you really get down to it, they're not. And
I know.
It, you know, and until you can expose that, and at least, if nothing else, you make them think. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's why we have to engage in the conversation.
Exactly.
Guys, I got 9 minutes left, and you know I kind of got off on a little digression there. I'm going to digress for one more thing, Robert, because I have to know. I think our audience wants to know. Being that you are half Jewish and half Spanish, is it?
But I have to correct you. I'm full blooded Jew. I'm not half, but I'm half Spanish. My mother
okay.
was a Jew, and my father was
then
a Jew,
you,
but I'm
then,
still half.
So then you've answered my question, because I was going to ask if it was Spewish or if it was Janish.
Jewish
and,
or what?
No, Spewish, Spanish Jewish, or Janish, Jewish Spanish.
Oh.
So you've answered my query.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. I mean, my gosh, you know, you gotta get a good guy like me on a ticket so I could get all the Jews and the Latinos on the Latino vote. Hey, Robert, if you want a vice president, I need a job.
There you go.
I need a job.
But Robert, it, seriously, all kidding aside, and you know, I had a great time when we got together down there, and
absolutely. I feel so bad that I won't be able to go to Indiana because of this. My third exam is going to be during that week, and that really just upset it. That just really just blew me away, and I just like, you know, I really wanted to come up to Indiana, and I really wanted to do it. But if we're going to do it next year, Damn, I'll make it next year.
There you go.
Sure.
Well, I was
still on this earth.
I was talking earlier about the preterist versus the futurist
mm-hmm.
viewpoint, and I wanted to let everyone know, you know, there's been that's a topic that brings up a lot of questions, and some people get angry because
mm-hmm.
it is seen as a challenge to their faith or a challenge to their eschatology, you know, a challenge to their belief system. And that's not at all what it is. But nonetheless, I am a member of a group on Yahoo that's called RP List, which is Real Preterist List. And
mm-hmm.
there's a gentleman on that is a member of the group. He does a radio show on the internet and a regular, you know, broadcast media radio program. He also does seminars and has written a few books. He has agreed to come on to the show on Monday night, July the 9th. And I'm pretty sure we'll have Mr. Dean Shook and some others on as well. So I want to start promoting that show now so that we can try and get the word out. And, you know, all those folks that have questions, whether it's, you know, you're trying to prove that the preterist idea is wrong, or whether you have genuine questions that maybe you're not sure, maybe it could be, maybe it couldn't be. You know, I want to invite everyone to tune in for that show. I think it'll be very informative.
Cool.
And, you know,
what's the number to that show?
Well, it's going to be on the Constitution Hour.
Oh, I won't.
It'll
I won't
be on
be
my
a,
show.
I won't do. Yeah,
be
but
on.
I have class. I'll miss it. Darn. I'll miss it because I have class.
You can always catch it in the archives, but it will be on Monday night, July the 9th, 7:30 Eastern Time on the Constitution Hour. And I think it would be a very informative show. I see we've got Oz in the chat room, and I know he had some questions. You know, him and I were discussing some things about Bible prophecy, and I think it'll be very informative, and it gives you an alternative view of what was going on, the Scripture as it was written. And, you know, not really going outside of Scripture, but looking at the most controversial book in the entire Bible, which is Revelation. There's been numerous books written, and, you know, no one really agrees on what the book of Revelation actually means or
right.
says. So I think it'll be a very interesting show. And I'm all
my call, and I'm going to let you go.
Not a problem.
Thanks.
Not a problem.
Okay.
Thanks for calling
Bye, Robert.
In.
Love you guys. Bye.
I love you, Linda. Be good.
All right, Robert. Any parting words, sir?
No, I'm waiting to hear for the Supreme Court decision on health care. I'm just what do we have? 2 more days to go, I guess.
Well, we
so
don't really.
Time.
We don't really know for sure. You know, the word on the street is that the individual mandate is doomed. And I'm going to come out right now and say, you know, that's quite possibly going to be the case. And if it is, just because the individual mandate gets shot down, do not think for a moment that that's the end of Obamacare. I don't believe that they intended for the individual mandate to stand as it is. And if they get rid of the individual mandate, then you know what? I think that opens the door for them to reword the law in such a way that it would mirror Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
And you know what that means, Ron? A single-payer system.
Which is exactly what you wanted from the get-go, isn't it?
That's right on, right there you are.
That is exactly what the goal was from the very beginning, that they wanted a single-payer system. Obama told you that. The Democrats, they wanted that single-payer health care system.
Right.
And they couldn't get it. They couldn't get the votes to get a single-payer system through. So what they did was they cobbled together this current health care law.
Right.
And it included the individual mandate. And
right.
I think they did so knowing that it would get shot down, but it comes down to the severability of it. And if you sever the individual mandate, then they say it guts the whole health care bill. But I don't believe that it does, because I'm certain that they've got something waiting in the wings to fully fund the damn thing and charge you a tax based on how much income you earn.
Right.
That's what I see. But nonetheless, Mr. Robert, it's always a pleasure having you call in. And you know, you're always a good sport. You always let me beat up on you a little bit, and you don't take it too personal. And it's not meant personal. It's all in jest.
No, it's not.
Guys, patriotfamilies.com. That's patriotfamilies with a YS.com. We've got a full lineup of shows throughout the week. Tomorrow night, 7:30 Eastern Time, is my show, the Constitution Hour. Tuesday night at 7 will be Bill Strong with Patriot Families Chat. Wednesday will be the very lovely Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. Thursday at 7, Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. And then Friday, I'm not sure if we're going to have Brian. He hasn't been on in a while. Saturday, we had Michael Magic. He's not been on in a while. And then, of course, Sunday again at 7, myself filling in for Frank Winkle with Fed Up Frank. So take the opportunity, stop by, check out the website, get involved, and, you know, let's hold our government. We really have no way of holding account at this point, but let's give them the big middle finger and tell them we're not just going to put up with it. We're not going to comply. We're not going to be good little debt slaves anymore. God bless you guys. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great evening.
You too, brother.